From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, September 9th, 2025. The U.S. Census released data today that show how many Mainers rely on government assistance programs such as SNAP, MaineCare, and Social Security. As Carol Bousquet reports, critics worry the Trump administration's demand for a new census will exclude vulnerable Mainers and mask the harms that program cuts will have on people in poverty.
U.S. Census data released Tuesday showed that last year, 92,000 Mainers, from children to seniors, benefited from government programs that provide food, health care, and Social Security. The number of Mainers in poverty without government assistance was 113,000. The results show tens of thousands of Mainers will be affected by the Trump administration's cuts to safety net programs. Maine Center for Economic Policy President Garrett Martin said in a statement that the Trump administration's demand for a new census will weaken data collection and attempt to hide the harm their policies cause. Martin called on lawmakers to stand up for Mainers who need food, health care, and housing, and not cave in to Trump's measures that benefit the ultra-wealthy. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
A Maine resident is hospitalized after contracting Triple E, according to the State Center for Disease Control. The agency says the resident developed severe symptoms in late August. It's the first time someone has been infected with the mosquito-borne virus this year. With recent heavy rain, the CDC says the risk of mosquito-borne illness across the state is high. Penobscot, Piscataquis, Somerset, and Waldo counties are especially at risk, officials say, because evidence shows the virus is prevalent there. The agency is urging people to prevent mosquito bites by wearing repellent, loose, long sleeves and pants, and draining standing water. Triple E causes flu-like symptoms and can also lead to brain swelling and meningitis. In 2021, 48-year-old Daniel Cromit was admitted to Mount Joseph Nursing Home in Waterville. He had cerebral palsy and a seizure disorder. Less than 6 months later, he died. His family is now suing the facility, alleging that Cromit died from neglect and abuse. Patty White reports.
Daniel Cromit loved apple picking, playing games, and giving hugs, says his sister, Carrie Francis. And despite his many health challenges, he lived a full life.
It never held him back from being a very important and well-loved part of our family.
As an adult, Daniel moved into a group home in Gardner, where he thrived, Carrie says. But in June of 2021, he fell and broke his hip and was admitted to Mount Joseph Nursing Home in Waterville to recover.
He was not going to be there long when we
were first. 4 to 6 weeks at the most.
Krista Cromit, Daniel's twin, says after several weeks at Mount Joseph, he didn't appear to be progressing in his recovery. And Krista noticed other problems.
He was never, ever washed or showered or teeth brushed or anything like that.
Daniel's family began to question his care, as did some staff members. One evening in mid-September, nurse Sheenie Foster noticed that Daniel's anti-seizure medication had run out. When she called the pharmacy to order more, they told her it was out of stock and had been for days.
And when I looked back for the previous 8 days, it had been signed off as given, meaning he got the medication. But the pharmacy said there's no way he got it.
The nurse who had signed off, Marius Ramirez, had been reprimanded before for falsifying records, according to the family's lawsuit. He'd also received warnings for ignoring policies, being rude to residents and staff, and for sleeping on the job. Foster says she told managers that Daniel had missed doses of his medication.
And it went nowhere. Nothing was done. The nurse was never investigated. There were other instances that I actually went to the director of nursing about this nurse. And at one point I was told to stop going to her, that I was picking on him.
Daniel, meanwhile, began to have frequent seizures, says Foster. One lasted 10 minutes and he was found with blood coming out of his mouth. He got cuts and bruises from falling out of his wheelchair.
There was one day he had a seizure, fell to the floor and split his head open. And we had to send him out to the emergency room.
Daniel's family says Mount Joseph shared little information about why his condition was worsening. As they grew more concerned, Krista says they tried to find him another placement. Then, during a visit in early December, Krista found her brother in excruciating pain with bruises on his wrists, knees, and a finger. She called 911, and Daniel was taken to a hospital.
I thought, okay, finally, phew, we're out of the woods. He's never going to go back there again.
But 2 days later, while still in the hospital, Daniel died of heart failure. Merrill Poulin is an attorney who's representing Krista, Carrie, and their father in a lawsuit against Mount Joseph and its owners. Poulin says the night before Daniel was taken to the hospital, nurse Marius Ramirez pinned him to the floor and gave him antipsychotic medication, which he should not have administered because of Daniel's seizure disorder.
Ramirez was criminally charged for what he did by the Attorney General's office.
Ramirez served 30 days in jail and temporarily lost his nursing license. It's now listed as active on a state website. But Poulin says others also bear responsibility.
This was not just nursing ineptitude, not just, you know, one bad apple.
Poulin says Daniel's death is also the result of Mount Joseph's business practices. Its owners and investors, Michael Bitterman, Akiko Ike, and Ephraim Lahasky, also have a stake in several companies that both operate the facility and own the real estate. The lawsuit alleges that they charged inflated rent and management fees to enrich themselves while draining the nursing home's resources to a degree that compromised patient care.
This was a deliberate scheme that was put in place, executed on, followed through on, knowing that the very thing that ended up happening would probably happen. That's evil. It's depraved. And people need to know about this because this isn't the only nursing home where this kind of thing happens.
The state of New York is currently suing Ephraim Lahasky for $18 million for alleged understaffing and neglect of residents at a nursing home. Lahasky, Ike, and Bitterman own nursing homes in other states that have been fined for violations or been issued low federal quality ratings. Mount Joseph has 1 star out of 5.
It's a slum.
Nurse Sheeny Foster now works at another facility. While she was at Mount Joseph, she says it was chronically understaffed. She's frustrated that it took Daniel's death to hold people accountable for his lack of care.
At the end of the day, you know, Bitterman's still going to get to live his life. Marius still gets to live his life. But Daniel doesn't get to live his.
Daniel's sisters say the pain of losing their brother is just as raw today as it was 4 years ago. And Krista says it's hard to believe that it happened despite their heavy involvement in Daniel's life.
I would like other families to know that you, if you have instincts or suspicions or feel like something's amiss, it probably is. And follow your instinct even if people disagree with you or think you're being a bulldog or you're being too aggressive.
When reached by phone, an administrative assistant at Mount Joseph said that the owners are not commenting on the lawsuit. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Maine regulators have sided with the Passamaquoddy tribe in a dispute with its electric utility over a major solar energy project. As Peter McGuire reports, investigators found the tribe's proposal does not violate state rules.
Eastern Maine Electric Co-op has contended that 200 rooftop arrays installed on homes in Indian Township should be treated as a discrete electric generating facility that is too large under Maine's solar electricity rules. But Passamaquoddy attorney Adam Cody says state regulators have determined that the projects were individual units, even though they were funded from the same $7.4 million federal grant.
Those rules have never been set up to apply to rooftop solar projects that's going to be used for somebody's home.
Investigators from the Public Utility Commission say the size regulation is intended to stop commercial entities from disguising big solar arrays as multiple smaller ones. The Indian Township project has been on hold since late last year. The PUC still needs to vote to approve the examiner's findings. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
At Maine Housing's conference in Bangor today, Governor Janet Mills touted the progress she says her administration has made in addressing the state's housing shortage. Mills says more than 1,800 units are under construction and 1,500 more homes are in various stages of development, the largest development pipeline in Maine Housing's history. But Mills blamed the Trump administration for slowing further progress and for implementing tariffs that she says are increasing home construction costs at a time when Maine can least afford it.
The administration in Washington is only making things difficult, making building homes and apartments more expensive. Thanks to the president's tariffs on building materials, softwood lumber prices were nearly 6% higher at the end of August than they were a year ago.
Mills acknowledged that community resistance is also holding Maine back in its efforts to grow the housing supply, and she urged Mainers to say yes to local projects that make sense for their area. Independent Senator Angus King of Maine told an online forum today he's very worried about the threat of cyber attacks. King told the forum hosted by Politico that the Trump administration's cuts to various federal agencies are undermining national security.
This is a problem that's massive. It's growing exponentially. I think ransomware attacks increased 1,200% last year, and AI is just going to accelerate that. And as long as particularly nation states feel that there's going to be no response, there's no cost, they're going to continue to do it.
King says he and Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Tom Cotton want to require the Trump administration's Pentagon chief to develop a deterrent strategy. Border Patrol in Maine says a 24-year-old U.S. citizen has been arrested after trying to hit an agent with her car last month. In a written statement, the Department of Homeland Security says border agents were assisting Maine State Police and the Knox County Sheriff's Office late last month with a commercial vehicle crash involving two people it says were in the country illegally. The agency says Olivia Wilkins, a bystander, drove her vehicle at the officers, nearly hitting them. She was arrested shortly after by Knox County Sheriff's deputies and is being charged with aggravated reckless conduct, driving to endanger, and other offenses. State officials were on the hot seat today about their decision to support a contract with a financially troubled company that transports low-income and disabled Mainers to medical appointments. But the Maine Department of Health and Human Services says the company receives few complaints. Kevin Miller reports.
Representative Michelle Meyer of Elliott says she's heard more complaints about the non-emergency transportation services offered by ModivCare to MaineCare clients than any other issue.
Showing up late consistently, about not showing up at all, about rude treatment, about leaving individuals with developmental and intellectual disabilities sitting in wheelchairs on the sidewalk.
Other members of the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee are also skeptical of the low complaint rates cited by DHHS. Democrats and Republicans pressed department officials about why the state is moving forward with a 10-year, estimated $750 million contract with Colorado-based ModivCare, even after the company's Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing last month. DHHS officials say they've received no calls about late payments or non-payments. And ModivCare's CEO, Heath Sampson, told the panel that his company will emerge stronger from bankruptcy.
And it's the right thing for Maine to ensure that we deliver our service and improve with the challenges and opportunities that Maine has. So there hasn't been any disruption, and there won't be any disruption.
Two Maine-based transportation providers have asked the courts to block the state's contract with ModivCare. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, emergency preparedness. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.